back together again, you and I, Tuesday, October 17th, 2023, on Connecticut Today. We talked about Bridgeport Mayor Joe Ganim's court appearance in connection with an ongoing absentee ballot investigation. Quinnipiac University law professor Wayne Unger dropped by to chat about a recent gag order connected to one of former President Trump's criminal cases. And we wrapped up the program with Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio's weekly update. And yet another chapter unveils itself in the Bridgeport absentee ballot thing. Hey, how are you? On this Tuesday, Joe Ganim questioned about Bridgeport primary absentee ballots and videos in court, going by this story that was filed about an hour ago at about a quarter after one. Good reporting here in the Connecticut Mirror, Andrew Brown and Dave Altamari. So I'll update you on this. Let me know what you think. To me, this is all, and don't take this the wrong way when I say this, it's all looking like a dog and pony show. It really is. I mean, we know something happened, right? We know something happened. There's video. There was never video before, but now there's video. And the video makes a huge difference here. We all know that. But the question remains, what is going to happen after all of this? And what will the state do? And what will the legislative leaders do in Hartford? And what will leaders do in Bridgeport to stop the embarrassment? Or maybe they're okay with the embarrassment. Do you ever think of that? Maybe. And again, I don't live in the city. I've watched it from near and afar for years and years and years. Like I said, I'm the guy in the upper deck who bought his cheap ticket, went up 20, 30 steps, don't want anybody sitting near me. I have my couple of hot dogs and my beer, and I'll sit and watch the game. But in the end, what's the end game here? How do we, whatever happens, if there's a reordered, if you will, if that's a word, a reordered primary here, if the primary stands and then we go ahead and, you know, go to the general election. I mean, if that stands and all that, you know, again, what is the end game here? Bridgeport Mayor Joe Ganim says here in the Connecticut Mirror, questioned under oath for more than an hour today, Tuesday, about absentee ballot voting in the city, surveillance videos that allegedly, let's be fair about this now, allegedly show a pair of his supporters delivering ballots to drop boxes, and whether he thinks, and this is important now, whether he thinks that that footage is proof that the city's recent Democratic primary was tainted by fraud. And again, and we'll get into this here in a second or two, but again, I urge you, be careful what you're looking at here and be careful how you read this. Because remember, the mayor, Mr. Gomes, Lamon Daniels, Mr. Daniels, you know, they are going to be on the ballot. We already know that. The lines may be different, and I know they're you know, arguing this thing is for a matter of principle, and I get it, and I understand it and all that, but, you know, keep your eye on the prize here. The Gomes attorney repeatedly asked the mayor whether he or anyone else involved in his campaign ever spoke to Wanda Jeter Pataki. She is one of the women accused of illegally delivering stacks of ballots about the absentee voting process. And again, this reporting we're taking verbatim here from the Connecticut Mirror. Kudos to them. Now, the mayor said, Ganim said, quote, he never spoke to Jeter Pataki about her work with absentee voters, but he characterized her, I should say. Surely, folks, the caffeine hasn't all kicked in yet. He characterized her as a, quote, volunteer who encouraged people to vote in whatever way they could. So again, from the court transcript and what happened today, the mayor referring to Wanda Jeter Pataki again, quote, as a volunteer who encouraged people to vote in whatever way they could. Oh, all right. That doesn't sound too bad there. Ganim was shown a number of clips of Wanda Jeter Pataki and Inida Martinez, a candidate for city council, allegedly delivering other people's ballots to drop boxes in several areas of the city. He was asked, according to the mayor here, whether he thought that footage represented potential election crimes. Ganim said he did not know whether Jeter Pataki mishandled other voters' absentee ballots, which is a potential election crime. But William Bloss, the Gomes lead attorney, continued to press the matter. Bloss asking the mayor, quote, "You believe that video showed misuse of the absentee ballot boxes, right?" Ganim saying at one point, the mayor saying, quote, "I didn't know what it showed. It certainly appeared that way." Bloss is trying to make a case that there was widespread absentee ballot fraud in the primary, enough fraud to make the judge question the win. And remember, anybody we talk about on this, whether it's our pal Lenny Grimaldi or people who know Bridgeport politics, they say there's a level that you have to approach here. You've got to hit a certain level of at least implied or inferred impropriety to make this judge say, okay, whether we need another primary here. Now, is the judge going to do that, knowing that there will be, Mr. Ganim, the Democratic incumbent mayor, John Gomes, and also Lamon Daniels on the November ballot anyway? During his time on the stand, Attorney Bloss tried to question the mayor about his relationship with Wanda Jeter Pataki, and he tried to ascertain whether the mayor's political campaign paid Jeter Pataki either directly or indirectly for her work with absentee ballot voters. So you see what's happening here, at least from the Gomes side and Bill Bloss here. There's trying to be kind of an A-B-C connection here. A relationship between Mayor Ganim on a political level with Wanda Jeter Pataki, her, you know, ability or her practices with absentee ballots, inferred or otherwise. And then you have your classic, well, if A equals B and B equals C, A by those properties is going to equal C. See what I'm getting at here? Basic algebra. Remember that? Algebra 101. Now, Ganim testified. We should continue here. By the way, if you have any thoughts on this, maybe you haven't read this Connecticut Mirror article, you weren't following it, that's why I'm going through this very carefully. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Now, the mayor, should be mentioned here, testified that Wanda Jeter Pataki was not paid directly through his campaign account. But Attorney Bloss, again, that's the Gomes attorney, continued to question the mayor about whether Wanda Jeter Pataki was paid through Park City Consulting, a limited liability corporation, an LLC, that did receive more than $140,000 by Ganim's 2023 campaign. Now, the mayor said he was unaware of whether Wanda Jeter Pataki received any money through that Park City Consulting, which is controlled by two city employees. Those employees, Thomas Gaudette and Constance Vickers. Vickers is the director of legislative affairs for the city. She told the Connecticut Mirror today that Wanda Jeter Pataki was not paid in any capacity through that LLC. Vickers went on to add that she and Thomas Gaudette, who is a Ganim mayoral aide, set up the LLC last year and provided mail advertising services in the lead up to the mayoral primary. And a good reporting there by the Connecticut Mirror for those of us who couldn't watch the, I think there may have been a live feed of this today, I'm not sure. So that is where we stand here. What do you think of this? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Look, again, I've had a few conversations with the mayor. I don't know anybody else involved here. Look, we know how politics works, and there may be nothing here There may be something really bad here. There may be something in the middle that, from a payment point of view and who's working for who, might not be all that bad, but then there's that video. So there are a number of angles to this story. But again, remember that the mayor and John Gomes and Lamon Daniels, they'll all be on the ballot in November, which is getting closer and closer. Now the question is, should the, and I'll ask you this, especially if you're, and you can look, if you want to comment from outside the city, sometimes those comments are the best when you don't have a vested interest here, when you don't live within the city limits, or maybe you work in Bridgeport or you just want this to end. What is your gut feeling on this case? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Look, there are going to be some people who are going to say, well, look, the mayor, I don't care what he says, he knew what was going on and he directed this. And then there are going to be some people who are thinking, well, you know, things happened in the past, but the mayor is smart enough to just go out and campaign and whatever some people do around him, like politicians of both parties. All over the world, all over the U.S., all over the Connecticut, you know, the state of Connecticut, you can't keep an eye on everybody. So, you know, maybe it's that, or maybe it's something in between. You don't know. You just don't know. Is it plausible? Is it possible that people do things knowing it will help their candidate, but they keep their candidate in the dark, so-and-so, and so on and so forth? Well, heck yeah. I mean, there are people, and please, understand me, listen to me carefully. I'm not comparing Joe Ganim to Richard Nixon. I'm not. Or to Ronald Reagan, or anybody like that. But, again, you have instances in history where, you know, people claim that, you know, Richard Nixon didn't set up Watergate, but he looked a blind way when his people were doing what they did. Or Ronald Reagan didn't directly say, go ahead and run the Iran-Contra operation there, that kind of a double blind, you know, shake and bake fake there. But Ollie North did it. So, again, you have a scenario here which is interesting, to say the least. Obviously, there'll be more witnesses cross-examined by Bill Bloss and the Gomes campaign. And then the city has its defense, too. So as my folks who know much more than this tell me on this, this is going to take weeks and weeks and weeks. And again, as we get closer to the actual general election on Election Day, November 5th, I think, it escapes me. A lot of people are going to say, all right, let's just have the mayoral election here. But again, if you do that, if you throw your arms up in the air and say, yeah, well, whatever, then what is the impetus for this not to happen again? You tell me, kids. All right, a lot more to go. Another check of news, traffic, and weather together coming up top of the hour at 4. And in the 5 o'clock hour, our Tuesday opinion leader, Megan Portfolio from the Yankee Institute. All that and more. We're keeping an eye on the lunacy in the House, seeing whether or not they'll get a House Speaker. Let's talk about, though, this story. And because of the atrocities going on in the Middle East right now, this story has kind of gotten pushed to the side a little bit. But a gag order was issued against former President Trump in connection with what he is saying or not saying or is supposed to not say in regards to the four cases, 91 charges against him. To explain all this is Assistant Professor of Law at Quinnipiac University, Wayne Unger, to talk about what exactly a gag order is, what the president is saying, should be saying about it, what his supporters are not seeing or are seeing. So we'll talk about that now. Hey, Professor Unger, it's Paul at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, and thank you for having me, Paul.
Great. Thanks for taking the time, Professor. We appreciate it. So let's start this way. In the classic sense, people hear this phrase all the time. A judge issues a gag order. Explain that to us. Let's start with that.
Sure. So a gag order is certainly probably a term that is more well known by the public. Not necessarily, but it can be a legal term. In short, it basically says that the person who is the subject of the gag order cannot speak about X, Y, or Z, whatever is outlined in the order.
So these orders now, are they, and let's get into the Trump case a little bit. Are these gag orders broad? Let's not talk about the Trump case right now for a second, but let me just say on a base level here, can they be broad gag orders? Can they be very tight? How are they issued? And does it have to do with the wording here, Professor?
Right. So a gag order can be as narrow as or as broad as the court decides the gag order to be. But to be clear, the court is also bound by the United States Constitution and specifically the First Amendment. So it can't be overly broad as to prohibit somebody from, you know, not speaking at all, right? Not saying any words whatsoever in life. That would be unduly or quite clearly unconstitutional. But there is not an unfettered right under the First Amendment to free speech. And what I mean by that is that we can consider some common examples, right, where you can't, I think the common example is you can't go into a crowded movie place or if you don't go to the movies anymore, maybe a crowded music festival and scream fire, thus causing a stampede leading to the death of an individual. That would be improper, and that would not be constitutionally protected. So there are situations in which we as a government or, you know, the government says we can limit your speech or your expression, and that is constitutional limitation because it satisfies a compelling government interest and the limitation is narrowly tailored to achieve that government interest. So in this way, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so, no, that's excellent stuff. So what is the judge in, say, some of the Trump cases or a case here saying, Professor? So, in other words, the judge is sitting back and saying, okay, we need this because why? And how is this being tailored?
So, yes, great question. It's as a preliminary matter, it's important to clarify that this is the federal case against the former president. And that federal case is being tried out of a D.C. federal court by Judge Chutkan. Now, in that federal case, he has issued the, you know, gag order against the former president with respect to that case and that case only. So it would not she would not be allowed to issue a gag order for all the cases because those are beyond her jurisdiction. It's just this limited case. And in this limited gag order, she has said that Donald Trump cannot speak about the court staff, about the court, about the prosecution, and about potential witnesses. And how this is weighed is, well, yeah, on one hand, you can say that the president has a First Amendment right to speak about all this, but that is balanced again the interest of the government in ensuring the proper administration of justice. And the court, in this case, has made the determination that the president's recent speech has infringed or impeded or in some way interfered with the proper administration of justice. And so, therefore, that limitation would be constitutional.
Does a judge, Professor Unger, in this case, does a judge issue, I would assume they issue due warnings on this? Does the judge pull legal counsel aside for Mr. Trump or anybody who said, hey, tell your client to put, I don't know whether there's a legal term for this, but put a sock in it. Because if he or she, I'm sure there's a Latin term in there somewhere. But, you know, if he or she doesn't stop here, I'm going to make he or she stop. So is there consultation with counsel on either side before a judge does this?
Yes. So in short, yes. And in a way, that's kind of common practice. I think in this case, in the Donald Trump case, that pulling the attorneys aside and having that, you know, somewhat friendly conversation about, hey, tell your client to put a sock in it, using your term there, already happened prior to the hearing on where the judge issued the gag order. So in a way, the gag order from this judge in this court says, okay, you have not listened to the advice of your counsel to put a sock in it. And so I'm going to order you to put a sock in it in that way. And that is, then the question becomes, well, what if he disobeys the order? Well, then it becomes an issue for the court to address. And the court kind of has broad discretion on how the court can address the disobeyance of a court order. It can be anything from verbal warnings to financial fines to imprisonment for contempt of court.
Wayne Unger is the guest, assistant professor of law at Quinnipiac University, talking about a federal judge's decision to impose a narrow gag order on former President Trump in the federal case here. Professor, in your experience of teaching this and reading all these documents, how narrow is narrow versus broad gag order? In other words, he can still, from what you've told me and from what I read, it's not like he has to completely clam up if he's asked about this, right?
That's correct. So the way I interpret this court's order is it is very narrow, right? If the objective is to ensure the fair administration of justice or not impede the administration of justice, well, then we have to ask what actions, aka what speech or expression, does lead to or does cause that impediment? Or I may be making up words here, and forgive me, Paul, but I think your listeners know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And in that way, the order must be narrowly tailored to ensure, right, the objective, which is the administration of justice. So, okay, all that is to say that this court has ordered not to speak about, say, the prosecution. Well, that's very specific to this case to prevent the potential sway of any jurors who may be selected for this case to create some sort of false animus against the prosecution. This order has also been limited to, say, the court and the staff of the court specifically. I think the judge the other day mentioned that we cannot calling court staff a thug, as the president, the former president, has done, is in no way proper because they are simply just doing their jobs. And in that way, we want to ensure that those court staff members are safe and secure, that their physical safety is not at risk for simply doing their jobs. So in this way, these limitations, if you look at the limitations for what he can and cannot talk about, they all apply to various aspects of the case or persons related to the case that could, again, disrupt the administration of justice. So certainly, if you attack the court staff and the court staff are like, we quit because our physical safety is at risk, well, then that would impede the administration of justice.
So it's kind of like in an NFL post game on Sunday around 4 o'clock or 7 o'clock, Professor, when the gaggle of reporters ask the head coach, what'd you think of the officiating today? And the coach says, they're all blind. That's not good. That's going to get pushback from the league, right?
Well, certainly. Now, I'm no football expert, so I'm going to have to defer to the football experts on that one. But let's kind of go one step further, Paul. There are situations in which the court has said, well, here the former president can speak about this. So the court recognized that the former president is running for the Republican nomination for the presidency once again. And because of that, you know, the former president can speak about his political rival, President Biden, in a way that is related to the presidential campaign. Because that does not interfere or impede or disrupt the, I keep using the term, but the administration of justice, because that's what it ultimately comes down to.
Associate Professor of Law, Quinnipiac University, Professor Wayne Unger. Professor, thank you so much. Great segment, great explanation, and I'm sure over the next few months as all these cases start moving along, we'll be chatting. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right, there you go. Professor Wayne Unger, an assistant professor of law at Quinnipiac University, chatting with us about the decision by a federal judge to impose a narrow gag order on President Trump. Even if you are a Trump supporter, I would think some of you most of you out there, was calling court employees thugs. That's not real presidential in as much of the fact. And I know you're going to say, well, they are thugs. Yeah, but you know what? You may think that. You can't say that. You know, it's like our parents taught us, or most of our parents taught us, just because you can say something and get away with it, or you think you can get away with it, doesn't mean you really should. So, again, we'll see what happens. We have this New York case against, the weakest of, the, I guess, the perceived cases with the payments to the adult film actress Stormy Daniels there. You have the Georgia Find Me Votes case. You have the federal case from January 6th of 2021. And you also have the federal case of the documents, which, again, oddly or not, when you talk to legal professionals like college professors and former prosecutors and legal analysts in media, they almost will all say that it's that classified documents case that may not have the buzz that the Stormy Daniels case has, or the Georgia case has, or the January 6th case has. But it's that classified documents case that may be the most perilous for Mr. Trump. Yes, yes, 203-333-9422-333-WICC. That be the number. We'll get back to open phones to wrap this sucker up later on today. And who knows, we may have a House Speaker by then, but maybe not. From the dysfunction in Washington, we go to the dysfunction in Hartford, right here in the great state of confusion, the state of Connecticut. The blog is the Hartford Portfolio, and every Tuesday at this time, Megan Portfolio with the Yankee Institute. Megan, good afternoon, and how might you be today?
Oh, I'm wonderful. It's award season, so I'm very excited.
Absolutely. It's a award season. And we're not talking about the Tonys, which I keep abreast of. My son works on Broadway, or the Emmys, or the Grammys. I'm in the radio business. But yes, a rather interesting award has been announced a few days ago by, I don't know, an organization, Megan, that you point out. That, I don't know, maybe you don't want to put this on your resume, but maybe you do. Talk a little about what is going on here, because this is not the first time we've heard about this.
Oh, no. Your listeners probably remember back in 2021, our Senator Richard Blumenthal was seen giving out awards at the Communist Amistad Awards ceremony in New Haven. It's an event that they hold every year. I think this year is the marking like the 104th year of the Communist Party in the United States. But this year, Paul, our mm-hmm. Senator Gary Winfield from New Haven, he is receiving an award along with a person from Ask Me Council 4, which is one of the state's largest labor unions. It represents all the state and local employees, and then also a gentleman from Husky for Immigrants. So all three are getting getting honored at the Amistad Awards ceremony in December.
Yeah, I'm seeing this. This is the People's World, continuing the Daily Worker, found in 1924, found dead in 1924. And you point out in your piece here, New Haven Senator honored with Communist Party Amistad Award, that Senator Blumenthal, and I remember this, Megan, a couple of years ago, he went full denial on this, didn't he, a couple of years back? How well I remember.
Oh, my goodness. So this was during COVID, so everything was Zoom at that point. And I had actually had got a ticket and attended, and it was, I think it was on a Sunday night, and I'm watching the thing, you know, eating dinner, and all of a sudden Senator Blumenthal pops up. I'm like, what? So I'm texting everyone in the office. I'm yeah. like, guys, Senator Blumenthal is at the Communist Awards this year. Because it's kind of like a, I don't want to say it's a fun article, but it's something we just always report on every year. And so, like, Mark Fitch, who works with me, immediately wrote a story, and it went viral.
Yeah,
and then come to find out, he didn't think it was the communist awards, though, in his defense. He thought it was a labor, some kind of labor awards ceremony. So he got out of it unscathed.
You know, Megan, you and I didn't fall off the turnip truck last week. Now, you know with politics. I'm going to take Senator Blumenthal at his word, but if you get invited to stuff, right, and I don't get invited to a lot. I'm a hermit. I stay home in my studio or I stay in the station. But if people say, hey, can you do this for me? You want to come here? The first thing I do, Megan, is I tap on my research staff, who you're talking to right now. You're talking to my research staff. And I go online and I say, who are these people? Or this person that contacted me. Let me see what this is about. And not only did Senator Blumenthal a few years ago, as we remember, deny knowing the event was sponsored by the Communist Party, apparently Julie Kushner, who's a very influential left-leaning member of the General Assembly, she also denied this, if I remember correctly.
Oh yeah, she pulled the same card that she didn't know, and maybe she didn't know. But there is this thing on the World Wide Web called Google, and you can kind of just punch it in, and it kind of comes back and tells you exactly what you're looking for. But I mean, in her defense, maybe she didn't know. But this thing went so viral, and it was on. I mean, even the left leaning news had to cover it; like they couldn't avoid it.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard for Senator Winfield to play the same card of saying he didn't know. And he's also been involved in other events with the Communist Party. He's actually been at one of their awards ceremonies, handing out an award, and he was also a panelist on I think it was on racial equity. And then there was this big caravan after to celebrate this lifelong New Haven communist. So I mean, it's going to be hard for him to deny not knowing it's the Communist Party.
Yeah, and here's the thing. And here's the thing. Megan Portfolio is a guest, by the way, from the Yankee Institute. Even if you agree in principle, Megan, with some of the goals here or the stated awards, to me, all right, now I'm no left winger, but to me, if I'm somewhere and I see or understand or somebody tells me, hey, this is a Communist Party event, if for nothing else to maintain my credibility, I don't go there. I mean, I just say, well, thank you, but I'm going to pass. Or, look, I'm a right-leaning talk show host, so that's like me, you know, telling my bosses at Connoisseur Media, hey, I got nominated for this award. Great. Who's giving it to you? The United Fascists of America. I don't think they would look kindly on me going there. But maybe we're the crazy ones, Megan. Maybe we just don't.
Well, no, we are not crazy. We're only a little crazy. But something, this video just popped up from this Communist Party praising this Connecticut SEIU boss in a video where he's talking about how union organizers were once classified as terrorists, and kind of making a comparison to Hamas terrorists. And he was made a statement in the video. It's been going around, and I really hope the news picks it up. But he's on video saying that his comrades are, you know, the people out in Gaza, the Hamas, the terrorists that, you know, committed these horrific crimes against the Israelis. So it's like, I would definitely want to distance myself from this crowd.
Yeah, you know, because
now this is just downright evil.
Yeah, because comrades is something that we use every day here in America. You think America, the red, white, and blue, baseball, apple pie, and Chevrolet, and comrades. Absolutely.
And comrades.
Jeez. Oh, Megan. Well, Megan, thank you. I'm going to post this on my my personal Facebook page, and I'm going to post this comrade video here and see what happens. New Haven Senator in Megan's latest blog here. New Haven Senator honored with a Communist Party Amistad Award. And in the past, they've honored Julie Kushner. She said she didn't know what it was. Dick Blumenthal says he didn't know what it was. So we'll see what
Senator Jan Hockadel from Meriden, Representative Edwin Vargas in Hartford. So, I mean, they love their General Assembly members.
They all don't know what this is. The word, you know, like you said, nobody knows about Google, about Bing, about DuckDuckGo. Nobody knows about this stuff. Hey, I'll take. Hey, maybe you know what it is, Megan? It's a free chicken dinner. Maybe that's it. Who knows?
Well, it better be fried chicken.
Yeah,
that's my favorite.
That's it. Yeah, I'll go for a dumpling here and there. All right. Megan, thanks. Appreciate it. We'll check in next week with you. Thanks.
All right, bye.
All right, thanks. Folks, I'm not kidding you. Now, listen. If you want to accept an award, now, Gary Winfield is a senior leader in the party in Hartford, so he probably is not going to back down here. But do you remember this story? Because I do. And when Megan posted this a couple of days ago, I said, are we at this again? The Connecticut People's World Committee announced on October 11th that Senator Gary Winfield, Democrat, New Haven, will receive an award at its annual Amistad Awards on Saturday, December 9th. The gathering is hosted by the Communist Party USA and celebrates the organization's 104th anniversary. Now, let me be serious about this for a moment. I'm sure Senator Winfield and everybody else that's been honored by this group, Senator Blumenthal a couple of years ago, Senator Kushner, I'm sure in their works as legislators and civic leaders that they've done good, but you cannot, I'm sorry, you cannot, for what they, listen, take a look at the countries that operate under the communist banner. Don't believe me. As I always say, take a look at the countries, and they're dwindling, but still use labor as a wedge issue, race as a wedge issue, class warfare as a wedge issue. How do you accept an award? And I'm not saying you cannot be proud of the work you do for your community. But I'm serious. If I, you know, with my right leanings on this show, and thank God people don't actually ask me to do this because I don't like doing stuff in person. It's funny. I'm on radio. I'm on TV. But to face people, it's part of the business here. But if I got a you know, hey, Paul, we listen to your show every day. Thanks for having our guests on. We're going to have you on. I say, well, we want to have you give you an award. Well, what's the proper spelling of your name? You know, for our press release, I say, whoa, I'll get back to you on this. And you would better believe that I would spend a good couple of hours online, you know, looking at the organization's name, who they're connected to, who they've been connected to in the past, and I would make a decision, you know? But apparently these awards are still given out. But the fact of the matter, now, with all due respect to Mr. Blumenthal or Senator Kushner or some other people, again, Julie Kushner, Danbury, she also denied, I'm looking at it right here from a couple of years ago, there was any connection between the People's Amistad Awards and the Communist Party. You mean to tell me with a straight face, and if you want to go, fine. Maybe with all due respect, Senator Winfield says, fine, I don't care if it's a Communist Party. The Communist Party is not what it used to be here in America. We're helping people. Okay, I'll respect him if he says that. But don't come back to me like other people did and say, well, I didn't know. No, like Megan said, there's a thing called Google. You can do a pretty incredibly thorough internet search in 20 minutes with a cup of coffee near you. You know, oh, my God, this group stands for that. Oh, this one's on the board of directors? Forget it. I ain't going. Or on the flip side, you know, you do that search and you say, oh, okay, I know this guy. He got, oh, all right, this guy's the board of directors. This guy, that's the first thing you do, folks. Go to an organization, and if they're political but they sound right, it's a home run for you, or they sound a little sketchy, right, just go on their website if they have one. Take a look at their board of directors or their advisors, and that'll tell you in 30 seconds what they're about. You know, a lot of times I have guests on this show, right? And, okay, I'll book the guest, but then I'll say, okay, and I'll check their group out. And okay, I recognize this person. I interviewed this guy 4 or 5 years ago. You know, because you have to in this business. And politicians, if they care about their image, they should do that as well.